Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Anchored by a core of young, homegrown talents and a camera-ready star, the New York Yankees appear poised for a sustained run at October. No, I'm not talking about Derek Jeter's pinstripers of 20 years ago. Contrary to many preseason predictions, the 2017 Yankees find themselves in the thick of the pennant race, thanks to breakout performances from players like Aaron Judge.
There it goes! Deep to left, really deep! See ya! Oh my goodness, what a shot by Aaron Judge!
For 16 years, Mark Feinsand had a front-row view of the action for the New York Daily News and MLB.com. His new book is The New York Yankees Fan's Bucket List, which is published by Triumph. And Mark Feinsand, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
I know you're off the daily beat now, but what are you making of the Yankees season so far?
Well, it's been exciting. They've been a really fun team to watch, and I think that's been one of the biggest complaints about this team for the past few years, is that they weren't fun and they weren't interesting. They were a bunch of older players who didn't really mesh well together and didn't live up to the hype or the paychecks. And right now they've got some youth infused into this roster, and some fans were really excited when they went to this youth movement. And while some of them struggled along the way, Aaron Judge in particular last year, you're seeing what he's doing this year. And right now they're a very fun, exciting team to watch.
You've been around the Yankees a lot. How big of a change in approach in the front office is this for this franchise?
Well, you mentioned the Derek Jeter teams of 20 years ago. The team was very spoiled in the fact that they had this core of players that succeeded together for 15 to 20 years, and they didn't have to change that approach. They were able to supplement that core with other free agents and the occasional homegrown player like a Brett Gardner or David Robertson, and they didn't have to really take a huge approach, a change in their approach. Now, as Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Andy Pettit and Jorge Posada all retired in the last 5 years, they've had to try some different things because the approach of just going out and signing the big free agents just wasn't working. And last year, Brian Cashman convinced Hal Steinbrenner to really, tear it down, trade a bunch of guys at the trade deadline, bring in some young talent. And the young talent they got last year aren't even the players that are having this success this year. These are guys they had drafted and signed internationally and developed within their system. And when they can bring in some of the guys that they added last year, you've really got the makings of a good young core that could potentially, have the same kind of long-lasting success that that Derek Jeter group did.
Now, heading into the season, if you read the predictions that every, website and paper puts out, the general consensus with some outliers was that they might win, 85, 86 games, maybe hang around for the second wild card. So my question is, how surprised are you at the success of the team so far?
Well, I think you have to be surprised to some extent. I mean, nobody expected Aaron Judge to be having an MVP-type season. And then when you look at the fact that Gary Sanchez missed a month and Didi Gregorius missed a month and Masahiro Tanaka has been terrible, you certainly wouldn't expect that they would be where they are, but they've gotten some great contributions from a lot of other guys. The pitching has been better than anybody expected, and I think people thought they'd be a good team, but certainly not a team that's in first place and looking as strong as it's been all year.
I have some more Yankees questions for you about your years covering the team, but I want to touch on some other big themes in baseball this year. Let's talk about the Houston Astros, a team as we speak that's playing 700 baseball. I mean, we expected them to be good, but this good?
No, I don't think anybody expected them to be this good. I think mostly because they had a lot of questions about their starting pitching, and truth be told, their starting pitching is still loaded with questions. Their offense has just been insanely productive, and as a result, they're sitting here in first place with a double-digit lead over everybody else in their division. That lineup is as talented as any in baseball. You look at what they've done over the past 5-6 years and putting it together. Sports Illustrated put out that infamous cover a few years ago saying you're 2017 world champion Houston Astros, and right now they're looking prophetic in that prediction. But they have to get their pitching settled if they're going to make a serious run come October. Dallas Keuchel's terrific, but now we've got Lance McCullers on the DL, and the back end of the rotation is full of question marks. So I wouldn't be surprised if Houston goes out this summer and acquires a big-time starting pitcher before the trade deadline, because that's really what they need in order to be taken seriously in October.
And now let's go to the NL West. The old guard of the Giants has been really scuffling. The Dodgers are in the thick of it, but the real story seems to be Colorado, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's an interesting team in the fact that, you know, they're playing well at home, but they're playing exceptionally well on the road. They come into this, you know, they've won two-thirds of their games away from Coors Field, which is, you know, obviously an easier situation for their pitchers. Usually their hitters would mash at home. They've got one of the best players in the game in Nolan Arenado, and they're taking advantage of the fact that the Giants are having an off year. But, you know, the Dodgers are right there with them. The Diamondbacks are also a surprising team. You know, the three teams, I believe, are separated by only about a game. So there's a chance that that division could be a really exciting race with three really, really good above-average teams. You know, you look at the NL Central, and the teams are all bunched up there too, but only one of them's over 500, and that's the Brewers, who are, you know, two games over. You're looking at the Rockies, the Dodgers, and the Diamondbacks. They're all at least 13 games over 500 here in early June. So that's a pretty impressive threesome of teams that are off to really, really solid starts.
And it's really hard to get a World Series rematch together, but take us through what you're seeing with the Indians and the Cubs so far.
Well, the Cubs just, you know, haven't clicked the way they do. I know some people look at it and say maybe it's a World Series hangover. The starting pitching just hasn't been as good. That's really as simple as it gets. You know, Jake Arrieta has not been the guy we saw the past 2 years. You know, some of their hitters are not off to the kinds of starts that that we expected from them. You know, but I think, as I discussed, the division is pretty mediocre right now. Nobody has taken advantage of the fact that the Cubs have been playing 500 ball for the whole year. And I think, you know, push comes to shove, you'd be hard-pressed to think anybody else is going to win that division. You'd have to think the Cubs are going to, you know, click at some point and, you know, and figure it out. But, you know, certainly a little bit of a disappointment after what they did last year. But then again, you know, when you've waited 108 years to win the World Series, I can't imagine the Cubs fans are going to, you know, freak out if they don't repeat this year. Indians fans, on the other hand, are probably a little anxious right now. They're also sort of hanging around that 500 mark. The Twins have been a surprise, but again, even though the Indians are, well, I believe they're two games over right now, you know, they're only a game out of first place, and that division is also, you know, both central divisions are really very mediocre this year. You don't have one team that's, you know, that's shot out to any sort of a lead. So if the Indians and Cubs are able to get themselves together and start looking like the teams from last year, there's no reason both of them can't be in the postseason.
And what about the two teams Yankee fans love to hate, the Mets and the Red Sox? What are you seeing so far?
Well, the Red Sox, you know, it's interesting. They were without David Price. Chris Sale was terrific for them, you know, has been terrific for them. Price is back now, which is going to be dangerous. But, you know, the offense isn't quite as good as everybody thought it was going to be. You know, they're playing under 500 on the road, but I don't think you can count them out. They play each other too many times, and if Boston gets hot against the Yankees, you know, in the second half of the season, that you know, they can take care of their own business. The Mets are a different story. They're under 500. Their pitching's been, you know, nothing close to what was expected of it, but they are finally getting healthy. And, you know, if that team can stay healthy, I don't know that they're going to be able to chase down the Nationals, who are, a pretty darn good team in their own right, with the exception of a leaky bullpen, which I'm assuming they will fix between now and the trade deadline. But, you know, maybe the Mets can climb themselves back in a wild card race. Again, with three teams playing as well as they are in the West, it's going to be hard for me to see right now to look at anybody outside of, you know, the Rockies, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks, whichever two of those don't win the division, and think that those aren't the odds-on favorites to win the two wild card spots in the National League.
We're speaking with Mark Feinsand, the author of the New York Yankees fans bucket list. You covered both Joe Torre, who was the manager of the Yankees dynasty years. He was there for 12 years. And now, all of a sudden, Joe Girardi, his successor as manager, is one of the longest tenured in baseball. What's the difference from your perspective in their two styles managing the Yanks?
You know, they both have their own, you know, pros and cons. I think Torre was more of a gut feel guy. Torre was great at managing the clubhouse in terms of, you know, he had teams filled with superstar players, guys who emerged during his tenure there as, you know, superstar potential Hall of Fame players. And yet, no matter how big the names got, no matter how big the personalities got, he had a way of keeping everybody sort of on the same page and, let them be themselves without, sort of being bigger than the team. Girardi's done a good job of that as well. You know, being in New York is a tough market. There's nothing like it in terms of media coverage and expectations, et cetera. You know, Girardi's had more young players to try to help bring up than Torrey did. And we've seen, from Girardi's days his 1 year in Florida with the Marlins that, he's good with young players. And, I think strategically Girardi's better at handling a bullpen in terms of keeping them healthy. He has very strict rules he adheres to in terms of his bullpen usage. And, Torrey wasn't as concerned with that. He was concerned with winning the game that day. Obviously they've both been very successful. Torrey's got 4 rings, the Girardi's 1. So Girardi's got some catching up to do. But I think Girardi is the right man for this rebuild process that they're going through right now. And Torrey was also, from my perspective, Torrey was as masterful a manager with the media as there was. Girardi went through some bumps with that his early years, but he's gotten much better and seems much more comfortable in his own skin when it comes to, speaking to the press every day.
It seems as if the franchise has moved the goalposts a little bit in terms of expectations, but Girardi and Cashman, the general manager, are both, at the end of contracts. And what do you think the likelihood is that, let's say the season ends in maybe the division series and not with a World Series, that these guys are back?
100%. I think once they committed to this rebuilding process, the youth movement, I think it bought both of them new contracts. And, you weren't going to come into this season and say, well, it's get to the World Series or else, because there was no realistic expectation that this team was going to get to the World Series this year. If they contend, if they get to the playoffs, even if they lose in the division series, it's been a hugely successful season for the Yankees, given what they're, rebuilding and contending at the same time is not an easy thing. And the Yankees right now are doing it. Now, even if they miss the playoffs, by a game or two, I still think it's 100% Girardi and Cashman come back, assuming that they both want to, because I just think that this is, they're all part of this plan. And once Steinbrenner gave Cashman the go-ahead to make those trades last year, to bring in the youth and to go with that route, I think that was just, you don't then change general managers a year later.
Now, it's easy to forget, because of the success so far this year, that at least, a year ago, Alex Rodriguez was a big part of the team, at least salary-wise. He ended up having his career sort of abruptly ended and now is taking on an advisory role with the team. How do you sum up A-Rod's time in New York? And this is a hard question, I know.
I was going to say, how long's your show? It's funny. He's still taking up a big part of the payroll. He's still making $21 million this year from the Yankees. So the payroll part hasn't gone away yet.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, right, exactly. How do you sum up his time in New York? Roller coaster probably is a word that comes to mind, or two words that come to mind. He was a lightning rod from the day he got here in terms of moving to third base and the on-again, off-again feuds, perceived or real with Jeter. Obviously all the steroid controversy in 2009 and then again with Biogenesis. He was a huge piece of their puzzle in winning that 2009 World Series. So, I will say this. For all his flaws, he's never lacked interest, and he's always been a very interesting guy to cover. He's been an interesting guy to watch. I think this next chapter of his career and his life as a broadcaster should go very well, because he probably has a higher baseball IQ than anybody I've ever been around. And he does, through all of the nonsense that he's dealt with, both self-inflicted and otherwise, he really does love the game. And I think you're seeing that in his new television career.
What's the hardest thing about the Yankees beat?
Just the competition. There's most beats in baseball have 2-3 guys or 2-3 guys or women who are on the beat. Maybe the local paper, maybe there's 2 local papers. MLB.com has a beat writer. That's it. Some of the bigger beats maybe have 4 or 5 traveling members on it. The Yankees have 12 traveling members on their beat. So between all of the New York and New Jersey newspapers, suburban papers, WFAN, ESPN, The Wall Street Journal, MLB.com. There's just a lot of competition covering this team, not to mention all the great national guys, you know, the Ken Rosenthals of the world and John Heyman and Buster Olney, et cetera. You know, everybody's covering the Yankees. The Yankees are a team that doesn't go unnoticed by anybody. So I would just say, you know, trying to compete with, you know, 12 to 20 people who are trying to get the same news you are, trying to write, you know, better stories, trying to, you know, stand out amongst the pack. That's definitely the hardest part of covering this team.
Now, you've covered them when they were world champions. You've covered them when they missed the playoffs. Is it harder, or is there a difference in covering the team when they're good as compared to when they're bad?
Well, I think it goes with any team that when a team is good, players are happier. They're happier to talk to you. They're not talking about struggles. They're not talking about bad things that they don't want to talk about. So when a team's going well, it can be a lot of fun to cover because everybody's generally in a good mood. When a team's going sour, that's not always the case, and guys might not be at their lockers quite as much, or you know, you can only ask a guy about some prolonged slump so many times before he says, "What do you want me to say to you? I'm in a slump." So, you know, I think with any team in any sport, I would imagine, although I've never covered other sports besides baseball, I would imagine that a winning team is always going to be more fun to cover than a losing team, just for the simple fact that, you know, the people involved are happier to talk to you about what's going on. And I think also generally fan interest in the team when they're winning is obviously higher than when they're losing. So, you know, I think you get more engaged readership when you're covering a team that's doing well.
Mark Feinsand is the author of the New York Yankees Fans Bucket List, and it's published by Triumph, and you can read his columns at MLB.com. Mark, I've been a fan of yours for a while. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it. Thank you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.